Koussevitzky was dictatorial, yes, true, and very grand, and one of the last of the great old school of European tyrants, along with Toscanini. And I suppose Zell is still
of that ilk,
in that tradition. But Koussevitzky was a combination of the benign tyrant, the grand seigneur, is a very important part of him, his clothes, his gestures, his speech, which wasn't particularly good in any language, and particularly funny in English. But it was grand.
Yes.
If he wanted the strings to give more, a warmer sonority, he wouldn't simply say, I would like a warmer sonority. But he would say, gentlemen, it must be like when the sun come up from the sky, warm like the sun. And it would take that long to say, and it would be that slow and ponderous and impressive.
Yes.
And somehow it would happen.
Marvelous.
It went on for decades with the Boston Symphony.
They finally all spoke in his accent.
And then he could turn to the viola section, which had just done something wrong, and scream, and not scream, but be so mortally offended in a personal way. You spoil me the whole thing, he would say. You spoil me the whole thing. Is the
personal.
Not, you didn't spoil Beethoven, you spoiled my work, yeah. You see. And it was all very personal. You must suffer. Why you don't suffer more? Only then the music will be beautiful. I mean, it was grand. Then, also, he was a very kind, warm, simple human man underneath all this. And every once in a while that would come out. But his general posture on the podium with his orchestra was of a grand seigneur.
Yes.
With those glorious capes and gloves and whatever. He was devoted to clothes. And with that manner of speech. And he was very handsome. Mm-hmm. And none of that came to me. None of that is.
Say, it's not. Really.
Because the really strong influence, as far as relationship with orchestra is concerned, came from that first observation of Metropolis with the Boston Symphony, which was wild with rage and excitement and emotions of various sorts, but all built on the love between him and the orchestra in making this thing together. Mm-hmm. At least that was the way I perceived it. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's always been with me in an orchestra.
Well, then this has been all been a kind of myth that has been, that has arisen of the great, great influence of
Koussevitzky. Well, there were influences, but the basic one of the relation with the orchestra, I don't think came from him.
I mean, it's very basic.
And Koussevitzky used to go into all sorts of detail when he taught me about how to approach the orchestra, how to walk in, how to stand on the podium.
The stage.
How you begin. That was always terribly important to him. Don't forget, he was a friend of Stanislavski.
Oh,
and he was terribly involved in the whole theater of it. He would prepare in his green room, as an actor prepares, in the Stanislavski method. And then he would walk very silently and slowly down to the wings. And his entrance was an incredible thing to behold. Very slow, his walk, the way he made the turn at the angle of the stage where he had to turn. It was something to behold. It was semi-military and semi-dance. Very grave and like a priest approaching an altar, because it was always a kind of reverential, solemn, religious occasion.
Yes.
Then he would come to the podium. His bowing was of a very special sort and very beautiful. Then he would turn, and then in his own words, I come to the podium. How did he say it? And then I look the orchestra, everyone. I look them, everyone, in the eye. Now, this takes a long time, especially at that rate of speed. From one end of the orchestra to the other, everyone, until I have him with me. Then, very slowly, I raise the arm, very slowly. And then I begin. And that was the moment, that moment of when I began. It's such a piece of timing, you know.
Yeah.
Extraordinary theatrics.
But then it seems that your relationship with him was really based more on a very personal...
I loved him. You see, I loved him enormously.
But I think that you did not...
Because I loved him mostly for his foibles, because when we were together, he was not the grand seigneur.
Yes.
Except when he was teaching me in the early days and giving me lectures about how you approach the podium. But as I got to know him more, and as he began to confess to me his deep feelings of being Jewish, because he had, of course, converted at the age of 16, and he was rather deeply moved by Christianity. And his wife, of course, helped very much, and his second wife also was an ardent Christian, Olga, who once told me that she had seen a vision of Christ at her bed when she was 10, provided an atmosphere in which it was very easy for him to sink into the semi-mystic Christian attitude. But when we were alone together, he would tell me how Jewish he felt, both in a religious sense and in the sense of his people. Mm-hmm. He became terribly interested in Israel, suddenly, for example. And after I'd been to Israel once or twice, I strongly recommended to them that Koussevitzky should come. And it was an odd position for me in those days, being still very young, to be recommending my master to an orchestra, but they wouldn't have him because he had converted. And at that time they weren't having any conductors who had ever turned their backs on Judaism.
Yeah.
Now that's all changed. And it started, the change was initiated by Koussevitzky, which I am proud to say I finally accomplished. And in 19... When did he go first? 49 or 50? Mm-hmm. And the Israel Orchestra came to America on a tour, which we shared, he and I. And that was his big identification with the Israel Orchestra.
Did he go there?
And then he died the next year. But that was a big moment in his life. But the influence of Koussevitzky was really off the podium.
That's what I figured.
To the very end, he tried to get me to use a baton, as Reiner had done. Reiner's baton was something very long, and everything depended on it. He hardly ever moved anything but this baton. Hmm. And in a minute way, tick, boom.
Yes.
You know that famous technique. Yes. Koussevitzky used a shorter baton, sort of pencil length, very delicate, and he would say to me, why you don't take the baguette? It is nothing, it is a little look. But it is so graceful, and you can do so many more things with it than with your hand. And I couldn't bear the idea of a baton. I just couldn't bear it. And I realize now that that, again, is due to that first overwhelming experience of Metropolis, who didn't use a baton.
Yes.
And I went through all Reiner's classes using a baton for the first couple of months, and then I pleaded with him to let me drop it, and he did. Mm. And the rest of the time, 2 years, I was without a baton. And the same with Koussevitzky.
Yes.
And it wasn't till 10 years ago, I think, 57, when my back went to pieces in Israel.
Yes, because I certainly have seen you use the baton.
That I took up a pencil because I just couldn't move.
Yeah.
And I've used a baton ever since then.
Yeah.
And a rather bigger one than Koussevitzky's. gone back the whole hog. And I find it is very useful and saves an enormous amount of energy.
Yes.
But then many people have pointed out that with the baton, they can discern a lot of Reiner influence in me. And that is also a myth, because that's never mentioned. Reiner is never mentioned as an influence. And he's a tremendously important influence in my conducting.
How?
See, people always see what they want to see, which is what they call the acrobatics and the big gestures and the dramatic, whatever it is I do. But they don't see the Reinerish part of it, which, or the Koussevitzky-ish part of it, which is very delicate and can be very small, and which I'm sure is more than 50% of the whole thing, maybe more than 80%. Yes. They see only the big things.
But it seems to me that Koussevitzky really identified with you on as a kind of alter ego figure.
A son, I think.
And
his successor. He had absolutely decided that I had to be his successor. And I kept telling him that I didn't want an orchestra, and I didn't want the Boston Symphony. He insisted. He said, "The will offer you, you will take." That was his line. And I said, "Well, maybe you're right. Who knows?" In the moment of such flattery and of being offered such a thing, I may just wilt and take it. As it turned out, his deepest wish, which was that I should be offered it, was not granted him in his last years of life.
Why?
When he resigned, he offered to resign from the Boston Symphony on condition that I would be brought in. And he had a plan whereby the first season I would do half, we would share equally, and then the second season I would do more and he less, and the third season he could leave completely. And they didn't buy it at all, the trustees of the Boston Symphony, and wrote him a letter which he showed me with tears rolling down his face, because it was so brusque and so unfeeling toward a man who for 25 years had been at the head of their orchestra, saying that they had agreed on Charles Münch, whom I love, and a fine, wonderful conductor. But Koussevitzky brandished this letter in the air, screaming, "These frivolous Frenchmen! They have taken these frivolous Frenchmen! And I have offered them Lenushka." He couldn't get over it. And it was never explained why, except that they said I was too young.
Yes.
And indeed, I was pretty young then. That was 17 years ago or more. But the truth was, I didn't want it. I didn't want any orchestra. And I had said no to any number of orchestras, even by that time.
Yes.